My guest at this time is Gregory Baylor. He is a senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom. You may remember our conversation from back in June. The focus of the conversation was an effort by Democrats in California to amend what's known as the California Equity in Higher Education Act by essentially threatening to remove student aid for students attending Christian or other religious institutions because of those institutions' insistence on adhering to a code of conduct for their staff and their students, and also factoring in those things for admission. And Mr. Baylor, thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be back with you.
First of all, how well did I summarize what we talked about before?
Well, you did quite well. There is one change to the proposed legislation that happened after our conversation. The sponsors of the bill extended it to reach discrimination, as they call it, on the basis of religion. And the bill also would have affected an institution's relationship with employees, applicants for employment. So in a sense, that first revision that I've just talked about made the bill worse than it was the last time we talked.
But there is some good news for these faith-based institutions, as well as the students who would be depending on that financial aid. After the recess for the California legislature, and this bill that we've mentioned had already gone through a number of committees, it was amended at the last moment before reaching passage. How has it changed?
Yeah, the bill was significantly modified, and the most devastating provisions were removed by the bill's sponsor. The bill has always required institutions to tell the State Student Aid Commission of California that they possess an exemption from the bans on discrimination in Title IX, a federal statute, and an exemption from the California Equity in Higher Education Act. The bill also requires institutions to disclose in a variety of contexts their possession of those exemptions. Those contexts include applications for employment, applications for admissions, and communications with current students and current employees. Those two provisions are still in the bill. But the provisions of the bill that would have made it extraordinarily difficult for these schools to continue to participate in the Cal Grant program have been removed. Namely, the provision that says if a school wants to participate in the Cal Grant program, they can't consider religion, they can't have traditional Christian codes of conduct having to do with sexuality, they can't consider religious beliefs in employment and admissions. Those things have been taken out of the bill, and we're certainly grateful that that has occurred.
And I know you've written on this for the Federalist Society. One mystery that still exists here, and I guess there may be more than one, is why the lead sponsor decided to take those most worrisome provisions out of the bill. Is there any insight on that yet?
Well, Senator Lara, Ricardo Lara from Bell Gardens in Los Angeles, commented on his decision in the press, and he indicated that he didn't want to rush into something with unintended consequences. He definitely wanted to shed light on what he calls appalling discrimination by religious institution, a characterization with which I strongly disagree. But I suspect there was more to it than just his concern about unintended consequences. There was a vigorous effort on behalf of the schools themselves lobbying against passage of this legislation. The schools activated their students, the parents of those students, their employees, their alumni, and many of California's churches, including prominent leaders of African American and Hispanic churches, made their voices known to the legislature, and it's fair to at least speculate that that played some role. However, there was an ongoing debate between Senator Lara and some of the even more left-wing groups in California. The ACLU actually at one point in one of those committees that the bill passed testified against the bill, not because they understood that it violates religious liberty, which it does, but rather because they didn't believe the bill was punitive enough. We heard similar stories about Planned Parenthood hoping to use this bill to punish schools that have pro-life values and policies and conduct standards consistent with those values. So I don't think it's, you know, we don't know exactly what the motivations were, but I suspect it might be a combination of all of those things we just mentioned.
What does it tell you when organizations like the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and their allies in elected office in this case want essentially to punish people for believing certain things?
Well, I think they certainly undervalue the value of religious higher education in America. I don't think they fully comprehend the good work that these institutions do. They don't comprehend how these schools uniquely, in many instances, reach out to economically disadvantaged and minority students. I don't think they value the character education that these institutions offer, the quality character of the graduates of these institutions, the contributions they make to our economy and to society. I think they undervalue that. The second thing it tells us is they are more interested in making an ideological and political statement than in protecting the interests of economically disadvantaged students. The fact of the matter is, it is extraordinarily rare for a Christ-centered institution in California, or anywhere else for that matter, to expel a student simply because he or she is engaged in same-sex sexual intimacy. Yes, to be sure, these schools believe in the traditional definition of marriage. Yes, they require their students to follow codes of conduct, which include refraining from sexual activity outside of marriage traditionally defined. But if they encounter a student who has violated these rules, the first response is not to suspend or expel these students. I think that's a myth that opponents of these schools' policies have propagated. The real response is a one of compassion, of ministry, and of redemption. So you really don't have that many instances that the ACLU and Ricardo Lara are trying to get at. So again, I think if I believe they realize that, and it makes you ask, what is the purpose of a law like this? The purpose of a law like this is to make a statement that their views of sexuality are correct and Christian and other traditional religious views of sexuality are wrong.
We're talking with Gregory Baylor. He is senior counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. And there might be some folks listening to us talk about this now, Mr. Baylor, who say, well, okay, so the bill didn't do this, so why are you still so concerned about it? And the reason is not only because of the cultural tide that we're looking at, but the sponsor here, Senator Ricardo Lara, has specifically said he wants to bring this back next year. So what do you anticipate there?
Well, I think we should take him at his word that he intends to bring this back. Again, he referred to the practices of these schools as, quote, appalling. It's hard to imagine that he, if he believes that he's going to continue to allow these practices to occur, at least if he has his own way. The second thing is, it just stands to reason that they're going to come back and do this. I think that the folks that he had disagreement with on the left end of the spectrum are probably having conversations as we speak, deciding what it is that they're going to do in the next legislative session, how they're all going to get on the same page. And frankly, I'm not optimistic that whatever bill that they end up producing and introducing will be all that friendly to religious institutions, to religious freedom in generally, and most significantly, to the economically disadvantaged students who rely upon their fellow citizens and taxpayers to help them afford a college education.
And what would happen if Cal Grant were not extended to those students? In addition to the students obviously having their choices dramatically reduced and perhaps their first choice not being an option to them if they can't afford the education otherwise, what does it mean for the institutions?
Well, it means probably that there's less revenue flowing into the institutions. It's fair to say that students who depend upon Cal Grants to afford a college education are not going to be able to afford the full freight that they would be charged in the absence of Cal Grants. Now, I'm sure that the schools, because of their concern for and love of these students, would do their best to replace that money, but I'm not convinced that that significant sum of money is available to them right now. Most of these institutions, although they're economically stable, don't have the endowments of a Princeton or a Stanford or something like that. So they do rely upon all these sources of income. So it would have an adverse impact on the institutions themselves. Second, if these students who were attending places like William Jessup and Biola and Point Loma Nazarene are no longer able to attend there, where are they going to go? Well, they're going to seek spots in the University of California system and in the Cal State University system. And if they get those spots, it's going to cost the state significantly more to educate them because economically disadvantaged students really require above and beyond what they pay themselves out of pocket. So there would be significant financial costs to the state itself, and it would create disruption among the UC and the CSU systems. And the worst possible outcome is these students who would have gone to a school like Westmont or Thomas Aquinas College, if they can't afford it, they may not have any place else to go, and they end up not having a college education at all just because there are folks who want to make an ideological statement to show their cultural power about issues of marriage and sexuality. And that's unfortunate.
Mr. Baylor, thank you for the update. We'll keep watching. Thank you for your time today, sir.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Gregory Baylor is senior counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.